travel without trouble, in spite of low vision. You may ask, if I cannot see very well, why would I want to travel? To answer that question, I'd like to quote a friend of mine, Charlie Zell, who has contributed a section of our website called Travels with Charlie. Charlie and his late wife, Evelyn, lived in Sacramento and traveled extensively throughout the state, as well as the rest of the world. He's traveled in almost 30 different countries. He believes that you do not have to be blind to travel, but if you are, don't let it slow you down. Before retiring in 1985, Charlie spent 9 years working in public transportation. This background, combined with his own low vision, influences his approach and thoughts on the mobility for the vision impaired. So, to quote Charlie, he says, "My eyes will not get any better, so I see all that I can while I can." You may be able to see more than you realize. Seeing is visual recognition. Low vision clinics can teach how to see more, or you can do it yourself. It takes a little effort and imagination. Even if you do not see well, seeing something more than your four walls should be an improvement. Travel involves new experiences and meeting new and interesting people. You may meet other low vision people along the way. "In all my travels," says Charlie, "I've met the nicest and friendliest people. Everybody is most helpful when I ask for help. I've never encountered a threatening situation." He goes on, "If you consider traveling only as transportation, you're missing a lot. Every trip should be a new seeing experience. Look where you're going and have been. And while walking, stop frequently and look around. You may not be able to see street signs, but you can learn new landmarks. In a car or a bus, look out all the windows. When you concentrate only on one window, you miss more than half." It's very easy, Charlie says, to rationalize not traveling. Probably, if you think about it, the bottom line is that you don't know how or what services are available to you, and maybe that's why you're not doing the traveling that you used to. If you've had a less than satisfactory experience, you may have even given up. But don't get discouraged. Services are available, and learning a few helpful hints can go far in building your confidence again. And that's what this presentation is about. You'll hear a lot of tips that'll go far in helping you to feel more confident when traveling. You'll also learn about your rights as a disabled citizen during this presentation. Let's start with that subject by discussing transportation close to home, because that is, after all, where most of your traveling takes place. The Americans with Disabilities Act, or the ADA, of 1990, Title II, requires that acceptable alternative transportation be available in every area of the country for people who are disabled due to visual impairment. According to several state surveys that I looked at when I put this together, acceptable accommodations for the visually impaired should, that is in a perfect world, include accessible, identifiable, and safe waiting areas, very important, verbal identification of stops and destinations, tickets and schedules in Braille, door-to-door service, not just curb-to-curb, but door-to-door, employees that are trained in the needs of the visually impaired, assistance in boarding and unboarding, availability, buses that run at least every 30 minutes is a wonderful idea, adequate number of vehicles, an adequate number and design of routes, adequate and convenient hours of operation, service during the evenings and the weekends, not just the weekdays, availability of intercity routes, that is from town to town, fares and fees in line with the local economy, allowance for short stops of less than an hour, and reliable on-time service. This would be heaven if all of these were in one place. We maintain a searchable national database for locating such transportation services and the accommodations they provide. Unfortunately, I've never found one that has every one of these accommodations listed. That would be the ultimate. There's some excellent ones. There's some very poor ones out there. I ran into a lady yesterday. Actually, didn't run into her, but she stood up in one of the presentations and said one way she handled the fact that this driver was not allowing her to even sit down before he started the bus, and she was being thrown about, and she had other disabilities as well as low vision. She said she simply stood past the white line right next to him and told him she's not going to sit down until he stops the bus and gives her time to go to her seat. And of course, the law says he can't drive with her standing there. So she said that was a very effective approach. Let's go to the services that they offer in the cities that are available to you. You may not be familiar with a lot of these. Local transit bus systems, which travel throughout your local area. The commuter bus system, which travels between your area and a nearby city or town. Light rail, rapid rail, or subway system. You might have commuter train service. You might have a commuter van pool service or a carpool matching service. Hopefully you also have taxi services. Of course, a lot of this depends upon the size of the town that you're in. There are paratransit systems. Now, these operate alongside a public transportation system to provide these special amenities. These services may also be provided by private companies or nonprofit organizations in the smaller towns. You'll also see local organizations in the smaller towns, usually, which have volunteer drivers. And a lot of those times, those are retired seniors who are volunteering their time, and all they ask is a little bit of reimbursement for gas. There are over-the-road buses like Greyhound. There's intercity train services like Amtrak. California has an excellent transportation service between towns. They call it the Red Line. I've been on it. It's a very good system. Ferry or water taxis, for those of you who live near the Great Lakes. There are service providers, of course, such as Medicaid and Medicare, which can get you back and forth to your doctor. There are also employers who will offer transportation. And so you will find these organizations if you do some looking and some calling around. They are out there to help. Most alternative transportation services are located, as I said, in or near large cities. And this means that if you live in a small town or an isolated rural area, you may have trouble finding such amenities. That's when you have to depend upon friends and family members. And here's what Charlie, my friend, Charlie Zell, had to say about that. He says, when you could drive, you may have called upon the AAA for help. Today, when you need help finding a ride, you should remember the AAAs of successful alternative transportation. Now, Charlie calls the AAAs attitude, attitude, and, of course, attitude. If you don't have a good attitude, he says, you may have difficulties in getting a ride. Nobody enjoys being around an old grump, Charlie says. Sure, we all have our problems, but do not burden your driver with them. We also need to remember that just because we have vision handicap, nobody owes us any special favors. Here are some specific suggestions for developing your own transportation system. Be friendly and courteous. Always thank your driver for the ride. Get to know your neighbors. The more you know and the better you know them, the better chance you may have of finding a ride. Learn their habits and their routines and coordinate your activities with theirs. Plan ahead and be organized. Nobody should be considered as being at your call or beckoning at a moment's notice. Reward your driver's thoughtfulness by offering to pay for a tank of gas. I know that can be expensive today. Buying their lunch, giving appropriate gifts or cards to remember their birthdays or holidays and special events. Spread the business around. Don't call on one person too frequently. It's also a good idea to have an ace up your sleeve. That's a person you rarely call upon, but may be able to help when you're in dire need. Avoid criticizing their driving or the particular route they choose to take. If you don't like it, just keep quiet. Find somebody else, or I guess stay home. Don't forget, Charlie also says, attitude, attitude, attitude. That's going to get you the rides and keep the friends. Now, for those brave souls who wish to travel a little further from home, let's take a look at some, quote, travel tips for people who are blind or visually impaired, unquote, provided courtesy of one of our affiliates, the Braille Institute, in Los Angeles, California. Plan ahead. Read about your destination before your trip so you know what to expect and what sites you want to visit. Make reservations whenever possible. Call airports and airlines ahead of time to find out about the services, including seating arrangements, special meals, and shuttles. Carry written directions with you. Have directions written down before leaving. Even if you can't read them, you can ask for help by showing them to someone else if you get lost. It's also helpful to have a copy of the exact address of where you're going. A driver may not know where a specific hotel is, especially if there are several with the same name. Keep necessities with you at all times. Carry your money, your keys, your tickets, and your bus pass in a pocket. If you happen to misplace your purse or your wallet or somebody takes it, heaven forbid, you still can reach your destination. Keep some extra money handy for tips, too. Know the bus schedule. Inform the bus driver where you want to get off so he knows how to call it out. And make sure he calls it out. Ask him, remind him when you get on the bus that you're visually impaired. And just sit near the front of the bus so you can keep reminding him if he forgets. Notify others about your needs. Inform your travel agency or companies, such as airlines, that you are using, that you are visually impaired. Tell your companion or those around you also about your visual limitations so they can help. People like to help. Ask questions. If you can't see a monitor or find a gate at the airport or the bus station, ask a customer service representative or another traveler to help you find your way. Carry your cane if you have one. Whether you choose to use it or not for mobility purposes, a cane helps to notify others that you are visually impaired, and they maybe even offer to help you without you having to ask. Ask about amusement parks or other tourist discounts. Some of the parks give discounts either to visually impaired visitors or to their sighted guides. Pre-board and bring carry-on luggage. Avoid the hassle of crowds and obstacles in aisles by pre-boarding the trains and the planes. They give you that opportunity in almost every case. Packing only carry-on luggage saves you time and trouble by eliminating a visit to the baggage claim terminal. If you do bring a suitcase, remember its type and its color. It may be helpful to affix a big, colorful piece of yarn or a sticker to it to help you or anyone assisting you with identification of your bag. Plan for guide dog restrictions if you have one of those wonderful beasts. Some countries and states, such as Hawaii, either do not allow guide dogs for short visits or have quarantine requirements. Call your local guide dog school for information about that, on such restrictions, before you travel. Enhance your sensory experience by going on tours and visiting gift shops. Some tour groups allow travelers who are visually impaired to experience an exhibit by touching the object, which is otherwise off limits. Gift shops often sell small-scale replicas, too, of the monuments, and you can touch those. Research the available accommodations. Foreign destinations are likely to have accommodations or services different from your home city, so prepare yourself by researching your destination before you plan your trip. And most important, keep in mind that travel can be more than just seeing the sights. It's also the new friends we make and the memories we bring home. A friend of ours actually had a very good idea. He likes to buy music at the places that he goes on CD. He buys it in the town, and then he plays it while his wife is driving around the town. When he comes home, when he plays that music, he remembers the experience, and that's a wonderful way to remember your trip without having to use your eyes. You might try that. In her article, How to Travel Safely with Low Vision, which was in the Leisure and Sports Review Travel and Recreation Catalog, Maureen Cook says, good preparation is key if you have low vision and want to travel safely by plane, train, or bus. Delays caused by adverse weather conditions or security alerts, for example, are factors beyond our control. Preventable delays, however, caused by lack of knowledge and inadequate preparation on our part, can make all the difference between a relaxing trip and one that is so stressful that you might be deterred from traveling alone again in the future. Knowing what you can do to ensure your trip is safe and pleasurable is essential. Here are Maureen's suggestions for helping to create a smooth, stress-free journey. Know your rights. Whether you intend to fly, take a train or a bus to your destination, you should be aware that your visual impairment entitles you to equal access. What exactly does that mean? Equal access means that you can't be discriminated against on grounds of your disability. As I discussed earlier, a passenger with low vision traveling in the United States, for example, has the right to travel safely and to receive help which will offer the same services as a normally sighted person. These include assistance in boarding and exiting, as well as with making connections. You have the right to access to the same information given to other passengers, such as gate assignments, flight delays, and safety briefings. For example, the European Rail Network, called EURAIL, provides specific travel aids for those travelers with visual impairments, including platform edges with raised markings and denotative signs carrying pictographs. I traveled in Brussels, and if it weren't for those pictures, you know, it's not just helping with people with vision problems, it also helps people with language problems. We can tell a picture of an airplane where we may not know that aeroplane in some countries means you're going to get on a jet. So those are very helpful. You have a right to assistance in bringing food to your seat when traveling by train or in finding the dining car. Mandatory acceptance by carriers of service animals is also a right. If you're traveling by train or bus, you may, subject to scheduling constraints, of course, walk your guide dog at the station or the bus stops. You also have the right to assistance from airport screeners in placing your items on the X-ray belt, letting you know where the metal detector is located, performing hand inspections of your white cane and other assistive equipment to avoid damage from an X-ray inspection, also allowing you to walk through with the cane instead of laying it on the belt and then walking unassisted. And also, they can hand inspect your guide animal's belongings, such as the collar or the harness or the leash, for the very same reason. In this way, Maureen, remember she's the lady who came up with all of these for you, wrote, she says, you'll not only travel safely, but you'll also be keeping as much independence as possible. Physical inspection, as I said, of your white cane will allow you to guide yourself through the walk-through metal detector, as will the requirements you and your guide dog should not be separated. These are your rights, and we in the United States are fortunate to enjoy that kind of protection. It's as well to remember, though, it's a good idea that to remember that the same protection is not always offered elsewhere in the world. Recently, Maureen describes a group of partially sighted travelers in the UK who were requested to exit a plane even though the airline had been contacted before the flight and had agreed to provide assistance for them. Safety issues were cited as the reason for the airline's decision. The real reason, Maureen says, had more to do with economics, as low-cost airlines keep their fares low by reducing the time their planes are on the ground. A group of visually impaired passengers, they felt, would delay flight takeoff and passengers exiting at the destination, which would add to the airline's cost. In the United States, costs cannot be kept low at the expense of disabled passengers. Finally, Maureen Cook adds her own suggestions to our growing list of traveling tips. Notify the airline, Amtrak, or Greyhound ahead of time that you will require assistance for a disability. If you're traveling by train, it's advisable to speak to a reservation agent rather than book your trip on the Amtrak website. This ensures your needs are recorded and passed on to the appropriate personnel. And then if you're traveling by bus, even if you've made advance requests like that, make the bus staff aware of your needs throughout the course of your ride. Be a pest. Make sure that they remember that you're there and that you need extra help. Book direct flights where possible. This will avoid the problem of making connections should your flight be delayed. Inquire whether the airline publishes information for travelers with a disability, including specific requirements for traveling with a service animal. And carry a signature guide. That's, of course, just a template, a piece of cardboard with a square cut out of it so you can sign your name easily. And keep your magnifier or other low vision aids close at hand, because you never know when you're going to have to need those. Pay particular attention to your money. Use a money belt for paper currency, keys, and tickets and so on, and a special wallet or a pocket for smaller bills, which you can use for those tips we talked about earlier, and small purchases. Carry a cell phone, that's very important, with tactile markings, pre-programmed with important telephone numbers. I saw a cell phone yesterday. It's not just a cell phone. It is also a GPS. That's a personal satellite guidance system. And it's also a reader. It's an audio reader. You can aim it at a sign, for example, on the street. It takes a picture of the sign, and then it reads what the sign says. It's expensive, but it's definitely worth it. It's just about everything a person needs who's visually impaired for traveling. Finally, carry medical matters that affect both yourself and your guide dog. Travel safely and with added peace of mind by carrying a list of your medications, including an emergency contact. And don't forget, as well, if you have a dog that's helping you, have the dog's health certificates complete with proof of vaccinations close at hand. If you find the prospect of organizing everything yourself like this too demanding, there are specialist travel agencies who will help in your travel planning, so you do not have to do all this yourself. These agencies offer a wide range of programs featuring hands-on learning, and they have sighted guides to help you out. And here are some additional tips. These are just kind of leftover tips. They're all from a book called Sightseeing on the Oregon Coast by Joyce Render Cohen and Evelyn Render Katz, who was an occupational therapist. They write, consult a travel agent with experience planning for people with vision loss. I mentioned that. Take advantage of any audio-guided or docent-led tours offered by parks and monuments. Call in advance. Look for those discounts. Here's some good ideas. They say pack a low-vision travel kit. That would include a flashlight, a magnifier, a high-wattage light bulb. It wouldn't hurt to carry your own to replace the low wattage if you need it. And carry a nightlight. Take bright blue painter's masking tape. This is a neat idea. To outline the light switches, the door locks, and the appliance controls in the space that you're reserving to stay in for a while. It'll come off easily, it won't mess anything up, and it'll make it easier for you to find those things. Also include a travel alarm, a portable CD player, a bold line pen to write with, and a signature guide, as I mentioned, your medication list, your itinerary, with all your destinations, flight numbers, and airline and ground transportation phone numbers in it. Put it all, it'll all fit in a small bag, and that will be your best friend. Get the latest on airport security regulations and pack accordingly. Those little plastic baggies are great organizers. You can keep those, and the airlines like them because they can see through them. Keep money, tickets, and important documents accessible and safe. Your travel wallet or fanny pack is very important. Your money belt. Keep your photo ID in there, currency, and everything where you can find it without having to search for it. And that includes your medications as well. Put them in a small carry-on bag. Don't pack them in your checked luggage, obviously. And then, I said, mark your luggage, and at your destination, you might even take time to organize the space to make it functional and safe, just like you do at home. If that charming inn you're staying at is cluttered with all kinds of lovely furniture, ask the employees to move the chairs out of the way and take those obstacles out of your path. Whether you want to dive in Australia or cruise to the Caribbean or kayak at the Colorado River or just take a day to go shopping, a little one-day shopping trip, help is available so you can travel safely and take part safely in your choice of activities. I hope this will encourage you to pursue that day trip or that two-week tour that you've always wanted to take. I hope what I've offered today will ensure that you can do this, that you know about these things. Of course, unexpected things will happen that are beyond your control, but you can control your copability during those times by being well prepared, and that will also help you to be more relaxed if something comes up. So I hope this presentation will help. Thank you for coming today. I look forward to seeing you again next month. Take good care of yourselves and each other.